Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga in Washington. Here are some of the top stories we are covering on this Wednesday, March 5th, 2025. Some officials of SPLM-IO opposition group have been arrested and army troops are surrounding the home of the first Vice President Riek Machar.
Deputy Chief of Defence Force and Acting General Chief of Staff of SPLM-IO has been arrested. He was arrested yesterday without arrest warrant, and the reason for his arrest is not known.
And the academic staff at South Sudan's Rumbek University say they are partially lifting the strike that was declared last year after going months without their salaries.
Now we are reaching to 10 months away out of classes. The decision being taken by the academic staff have really made us very happy.
We'll have those stories and more coming up right here on South Sudan in Focus. Some leaders of the SPLM-IO opposition group have been arrested and army troops are surrounding the home of first Vice President Riek Machar, the party leader. Deng Gai Deng files from Juba.
Pal Mai Deng, the SPLM-IO spokesperson, says government security forces arrested Petroleum Minister Port Kang Chol, a senior SPLM-IO official, at midnight on Tuesday at his residence in Thongping, Juba. Mai also confirmed that General Gabriel Duop Lam, a top SPLA-IO military commander, was arrested earlier.
The Deputy Chief of Defence Force and Acting General Chief of Staff of SPLA-IO has been arrested. He was arrested yesterday without arrest warrant, and the reason for his arrest is not known. And then yesterday midnight, Honorable Port Kang, Minister of Petroleum, was also forcefully taken out of his home and has been arrested. We do not know the reasons why he was arrested. And then yesterday night, the resident of the first Vice President was also besieged, which was also another development. We do not also know why this was happening.
Mai warns that this arrest threatened the 2018 revitalized peace agreement and could derail its implementation. In addition, government troops have surrounded the home of first Vice President Riek Machar, who is a leader of the SPLM-AIO.
And now that the violation has taken this direction, we very much concern that the whole agreement is at risk, and that will likely lie the country back into a situation many of us do not seek.
At a press conference Wednesday afternoon, Michael Makwe-Ilweth, the National Minister of Information, confirmed the arrest, but gave no specifics.
They were arrested because they are in conflict with the law. There is no joke about that, because what we need is security. And as such, if anybody is arrested, you must have been arrested because of a reason.
When asked about troop deployments around the residence of first Vice President Riek Machar, Makwe said it was to calm tensions and ensure security in Juba. A deadly clash between the South Sudan People's Defense Force and the White Army militia on Monday reportedly resulted in multiple deaths and injuries in Nasir County. Makwe urged SPLM-AIO leaders to restrain the White Army, which he claimed is affiliated with the opposition.
The Artigono calls upon the partner member, that is the partner member of the Artigono, who is the SPLM-AIO, to control and restrain its forces and respect and abide by the resolutions of the 3rd of March 2025. And as you have known here, the SPLM-AIO is whom? The White Army. You might have come across a video where they have, of course, shouting the slogans of the IO, which proves that the so-called White Army is not actually a White Army, but an IO force that attacked Nasir and captured it.
SPLM-AIO has denied involvement in Nasir clashes, instead calling on the government to deploy the necessary unified forces, who they say civilians trust more than SSPDF. However, Makwei said that unified forces cannot be deployed because they lack weapons due to the arms embargo on South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng, reporting from Juba.
South Sudanese citizens in Juba have expressed concern over the deployment of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces at the residence of the first Vice President Riek Machar, tenor with fear that it could act as a trigger of fresh violence in the country. Dennis Lungonyi spoke with the people in Juba.
The government need to slow down in the way they handle things. They need to change the way they handle things. They need to handle things with extra carefulness because the civil population is already suffering. It's suffering from hunger. So to make things worse again politically, this is something that is unacceptable. So my advice to both parties, the government and the SPLM-IO, that they need to work hand in hand. They cannot return the country back to war because civilians are already suffering. So they need to care for their citizens who are already suffering from hunger. They need to sit on the table and dialogue.
I am very concerned as a resident of Juba, and these developments are very scaring to me. I foresee violence probably escalating, maybe in Juba or even in parts where already violence is taking place. So I would urge on the political actors and even the peace grantors to step up efforts. I've already seen a statement from the IGAD, which is a very good step. Different actors should come in, the civil society, the South Sudan Council of Churches should come up to ensure that any political differences among us, these parties that may take us to conflict again are resolved.
The deployment is not constitutional. According to the R-axis, the parties to the agreement should agree on what they should be done. But why the deployment? What has gone wrong? If there's anything, the parties to the agreement, especially the president and the first vice president, should sit together and discuss issues. The day before yesterday, they had a meeting on the issue of Nasser, Western Bargazal, and Western Equatoria. Now what has happened? Even we citizens, we fail to understand.
Issues of deployment around opposition leaders is inflammatory, and it is not a good thing to be done, because what should be demonstrated by the government of national unity is to encourage dialogue, understand issues that are happening, and making sure that the revitalized peace agreement is implemented inclusively and with all parties engaged. This will start paving a direct, peaceful direction of this country. So I am absolutely concerned, and the parties to the agreement are supposed to act now.
The current situation in the Republic of South Sudan is going to jeopardize the implementation of the peace agreement, especially the whole peace agreement. And what happened yesterday is really disturbing, you know, the question of trust. If the these people, they will trust each other. Those are the series of questions that citizens are asking, whether the peace implementation is still in place or not.
Those are the views of Sudanese citizens in Juba. They spoke to our correspondent there, Dennis Lagonyi. For more on the situation in South Sudan, I reached Jack Maduk Jok, a professor at Syracuse University. His areas of specialization include security, governance, democracy, and development in South Sudan and Sudan.
Well, it is a very dangerous situation. And yes, indeed, I have also gathered that the Minister of Petroleum, Port Kang, was arrested. The Chief of Defense Forces of SPLA-IO was also arrested, and some of his forces disarmed. We gather that the house of the first vice president, Dr. Riek Machar Teny, is now surrounded by heavy force. So these are indeed movements that are reminiscent of things that have happened in the past to the detriment of the country. And so we are alarmed that these are happening yet again, despite the rapprochement that has happened over the last few years between IO and the government. So nothing really to predict, but people are alarmed that this could be a repeat of some events that have taken place in the past, which eventually led to breakdown and war, an all-out civil war coming. So a lot of people are saying, yes, the situation remains under control, according to the government spokesperson, Michael Makwei. But everybody else is seeing that there is no such thing as the situation being under control.
Yeah, talking of past events, the rivalry between Riek Machar and President Salva Kiir in the past has exploded into civil war. Do you see the two coming to an understanding this time and avoiding more conflict?
One would have wished that was the case. And so Riek Machar has been issuing statements requesting to meet with the president. And this request is being downplayed by the government, sometimes even described as being disrespectful and unprocedural for the vice president to write publicly to the president when they are both in the presidency. But we don't know whether the situation has reached a point where people have really already drawn their boundaries and are in a confrontational mood, or whether some moments of reasoning will come through. We hope the latter. We really hope that President and Vice President will seek to sit down and discuss whatever disagreements are. You will recall the states that are in turmoil at the moment, the state of Upper Nile, which is where Nasser and Ulang counties are, which are the areas where the fighting has taken place, and then the state of Western Bahr al-Ghazal and the state of Western Equatoria are the areas where the states where the governors, the state governors in all the three were under the SPLM-IO. So that these places are in turmoil is not accidental. And it is it seems to be driving in that direction where the government has already decided that enough is enough and they are going to apprehend the IO and which in essence is dismantling of the peace agreement which created the government of national unity. And so the prospects for a return to peace are dwindling by the day, save intervention of the graceful God, we hope.
The elections had been scheduled for last year. They were postponed by 2 years. Now, given this kind of tension, do you think there's a chance they would be held anytime soon?
Well, if you stack up the priorities that are or the challenges that are facing the country, elections doesn't seem to be to spring to the top. Right now, the country is facing serious food deficits, even reaching famine levels. The war that is going on along ethnic lines, the attack by the state on some regions of the country, the economy is tanked, and the government institutions have all but collapsed in terms of their ability to deliver services. So I think we would rather be concerned about how the country itself can stand up and remain a country.
That's Jock Madot Jock, a professor at Syracuse University. He spoke with me from New York. The academic staff at South Sudan's Rumbek University say they are partially lifting the strike that was declared last year after going months without their salaries. The administration of the teaching staff says the decision was reached after South Sudan's Vice President Benjamin Ball promised timely payment of salaries to clear all the outstanding salary arrears. For VOA News, Manyang David Ma reports from Juba.
Last July, teaching staff at Rumbek University of Science and Technology declared an indefinite closure of the university after they had gone months without being paid their salaries or travel allowances. Samuel Mabur, chairperson of academic staff at Rumbek University, says the time has come to call off the strike because there has been some level of cooperation from South Sudan's transitional government of national unity.
They resolved that they will pay the civil servants the arrears, and it will start from March 24th. And this thing will be continuing every month. On 24th of every new month, they will be paying salaries. So we have resolved to leave the strike partially, and then we wait for the implementation of their promises.
A week ago, Benjamin Bolmel, Vice President and Chairperson for the Economic Cluster, met with President Salva Kiir and then announced that civil servants will, starting this month, receive salaries on time. South Sudan's government has struggled to pay civil servant salaries for more than a year after the war in Sudan cut off its oil export revenue. Mabor says if the government does not meet this promise, the academic staff will close the university once again.
At any time, we can again go on industrial action. We are just giving a space for the government. Know that we are not against the government, and we have a lot of challenges facing us as academic staff. Our children now are not able to go to school for these 2 years. Also, we are not able to bring food to the table for our families, you see.
The decision to partially leave the strike and reopen offers some relief to thousands of students at Rumbek University. Christopher Chol, a fourth-year student at the university, says he is excited to be back in a lecture hall again after nearly a year.
Now we are reaching to 10 months away out of classes. The decision being taken by the academic staff have really made us very happy. Because without education, the country will not progress successfully. I'm not sure whether all of us, we students, we are going to come back in numbers. Because girls, they stay away in the university for almost a year.
The university vice chancellor, Joshua Otorakol, says although the strike has been lifted, he is not sure when lectures will resume.
It's not an easy issue. It is connected to so many things, brother. You bring a student, they have a kitchen. People of the kitchen, they need money. So it's a real preparation. It's not just opening. And when you open, that means you have to face all the challenges. So you should have prepared for that.
Sabit Jobrej, the guild president at the university, disagrees.
We have tried by ourselves. Me, myself, as the guild president, I've talked with the food contractor to start supporting us to bring food. And he will be demanding like South Sudanese or the civilians who are not being paid. So I don't see that condition to be much because he has accepted.
Reg says his students have waited for far too long to afford another delay. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer, reporting from Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America, President Donald Trump's speech to Congress after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
And for today's words of wisdom, we have a proverb from Juba.
This is me, Davido, from Juba. I want to speak to you my proverb in our language that ngola gadokona na mugun dokonda lokpolo dokona na mugun dokonda loro lo dokona na mugun. This means in English that what you do good, you are doing it for yourself, but what you do wrong, you do it for yourself. So this is what I have said in Juba County.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. President Donald Trump delivered remarks before a joint session of Congress Tuesday evening, lauding early steps taken by his administration to slash the bureaucracy, order stiff tariffs on America's closest trading partners, and pressure Ukraine to stop fighting against a Russian invasion. As Trump spoke, Democrats watched and made their points, protests clear. White House bureau chief Pase Wadokswara has this report.
President Donald Trump's Tuesday evening speech marks his first address to a joint session of Congress since he began his second term on January 20.
America's momentum is back. Our spirit is back. Our pride is back. Our confidence is back. And the American dream is surging bigger and better than ever before.
But barely 5 minutes in, the Democratic Representative Al Green of Texas began shouting that Trump had, quote, no mandate to cut Medicaid, the government aid program for medical coverage for low-income people.
Mr. Green, take your seat. Take your seat, sir.
Green was escorted out. Trump highlighted the steep tariffs he enacted Tuesday on China and U.S. neighbors Mexico and Canada. These top three U.S. trading partners have threatened retaliation, sending financial markets tumbling amid fears of a new trade war.
There'll be a little disturbance, but we're okay with that. It won't be much.
Earlier this week, Trump paused military aid to Ukraine, following last week's combative Oval Office meeting with President Volodymyr Zelensky over a deal that would give the U.S. rights to Ukrainian rare earth minerals. It's part of his efforts to press Kyiv to take a deal to end the fight against Russia's invasion of the country.
Simultaneously, we've had serious discussions with Russia and have received strong signals that they are ready for peace.
In delivering the Democrats' response, Senator Alisa Slotkin of Michigan highlighted Trump's fiery exchange with Zelensky.
And that scene in the Oval Office wasn't just a bad episode of reality TV. It summed up Trump's whole approach to the world. He believes in cozying up to dictators like Vladimir Putin and kicking our friends like the Canadians in the teeth. He sees American leadership as merely a series of real estate transactions.
Other Democrats signaled their protest while Trump spoke, wearing pink to call attention to Trump's policies they say negatively impact women and families, and holding signs including Musk steals.
Doge. Perhaps you've heard of it. Perhaps.
Referring to efforts by tech billionaire Elon Musk to slash federal bureaucracy by canceling government contracts and firing tens of thousands of federal employees.
And any federal bureaucrat who resists this change will be removed from office immediately. Because we are draining the swamp.
Again, the Democrats' response from Slotkin.
You want to cut waste? I'll help you do it. But change doesn't need to be chaotic or make us less safe. The mindless firing of people who work to protect our nuclear weapons, keep our planes from crashing, and conduct the research that finds the cure for cancer, only to rehire them 2 days later? No CEO in America could do that without being summarily fired.
Trump credited himself for the drop in the number of migrants illegally crossing the U.S. southern border.
The media and our friends in the Democrat Party kept saying we needed new legislation, we must have legislation to secure the border. But it turned out that all we really needed was a new president.
Sitting with First Lady Melania Trump were guests whose life experiences amplify her husband's agenda, including an activist against transgender athletes in women's sports and the family of a woman killed by an undocumented immigrant. Trump repeated his calls to take back the Panama Canal and take over Greenland, but not his demands to expel Palestinians from Gaza. He spoke for an hour and 40 minutes, the longest presidential speech to Congress. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Ramadan in America, like elsewhere in the world, is a month of fasting, prayer, charitable giving, and reflection. Muslim Americans of diverse backgrounds and national origins gather in Islamic centers across the U.S. to worship and celebrate their faith. Ramadan in Morocco involves some special traditions and some common rituals shared with other Muslims around the world. Muhammad El-Wafi is a Moroccan-American and a former Morocco diplomat in Washington. He talked to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shanawi about Ramadan in his native country.
Obviously, there is some common traditions, rituals,
prayers in the mosques and uniting families around the table for the breakfast time. But it differs from a region to another. The south of Morocco have different traditions due to weather, due to heritage, differs from the north. Normally, al harira, it's a common dish presented in the Moroccan table during the month of Ramadan. All Moroccans must have harira, which is well known among many populations around the world. They know harira. It's a complete meal that includes meats, chicken, all the ingredients, including vegetables. And it's done in a manner that leaves you completely full after eating a bowl of harira together with dates and some sweets, and combined between sweets and sour at the same time. Also, during the month of Ramadan, Moroccans tend to go visit families after the breakfast. Husband and wife take one day to her father's and the second day to his father's, and spend the whole night with them, pray together, maybe go to the mosque, and then chat, speak, watch their favorite programs on TV, and then go back for the suhoor, which is the last meal eaten during the night of Ramadan before the sun rise. Also, there is a tradition of paying a lot of attention to kids, especially in their first day of fasting, and preparing future generation for this kind of spirituality and belief. So, Morocco differs in dishes, food, spices. The traditions in the streets are totally different from the rest of the Arab and Muslim world. And all that, Mr. Mohammed, is due to the non-existence of the Ottoman Empire in Morocco. Morocco kept its own traditions because it was the only Arab country that was not invaded by the Ottoman Empire. And that had left Morocco with its own traditions, Andalusian, a mixture of Andalusian, Berber, Arab, a unique mixture of traditions that allow this country to be distinguished all among all the other Arab and Muslim states.
As a Moroccan American, what do you miss living Ramadan in America?
Obviously, family. Missing the family, missing the gathering, missing share with them that beautiful moment of iftar and go to the mosque with dad and take mom for a walk after breakfast. A Ramadan without family, you lack a very, very crucial and important element of this holy month, which is having your family around you and during the breakfast table.
Do Moroccan Americans gather and breakfast together in this area?
I would say yes, but with an exception that Moroccan American population in the United States tend to integrate with other Muslim communities. Mostly they do share their breakfast, especially with Egyptians and Jordanians, and they have specific nationalities like Egyptians, for example. In many ways, I've seen Moroccans married to Egyptian, female married to Moroccans, Moroccans married to cross marriage, have created this kind of cross-cultural too. But I would say Moroccans are not isolated in the sense of being just Moroccans. Rather, they have friends, like I said, Egyptian, Jordanians, and some Gulf countries too.
Mohammed Alwafi is a Moroccan-American and a former Moroccan diplomat. He was speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi. And that's all for this Monday, for this Wednesday, March 5th, 2025, South Sudan in Focus. We now leave you with Sokota Mama by Tutu. That song, Muhammad Sokota Mama. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, on this broadcast from Washington. For more information on our program, log on to voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Wafori, and our engineer, Patrick Deya, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Mama, 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 mama
mama, mama.